This is podcast number 75 for the Well-Educated Mother's Heart. I'm Marlene Peterson, and today I'm sharing lessons from a tornado. I was working on a podcast about Abraham Lincoln late yesterday afternoon. Yesterday actually marked the 153rd year since our great president died, and he's one of our month 8 topics. He was shot just 6 days after the surrender at Appomattox, where I happen to live. Anyway, I was interrupted by the gathering of dark clouds and strong winds, and my husband told me we were under a tornado watch. The storm blew through without incident here, but soon my Facebook feed showed that my friends in Lynchburg weren't so lucky. A tornado touched down right where a couple of my kids moved away from just a few months ago. Fortunately, no one was hurt, but I started to see images of giant trees down and buildings and homes demolished. A few miles north, evidently 20 to 25 homes were lost or heavily damaged. This morning, I'm hearing from friends who are still without power and schools are closed. It sounds like there's a lot of cleanup going on. But my thoughts have turned to a similar incident 2 years ago, where a massive tornado hit much closer to home. I wrote a little piece about it in the newsletter, and I thought maybe I'd share it again for my podcast this morning, because it reminds us of what really matters. So this is what I wrote 2 years ago. Late Wednesday afternoon, I was sitting at my computer working on this newsletter when my cell phone started beeping and tornado warnings started blasting outside. Tornadoes are rare here in Appomattox, Virginia, but I quickly learned a massive tornado was heading our way, and we were warned to seek shelter immediately. Our power went out as we gathered in the basement and waited for the wind and the hail to pass. A little while later, my friend Tracy texted me, "Are you okay?" I texted back, "We're all fine. How about you?" She responded, "Pray for Grace's family. They lost half their house." I asked again, "Are you okay?" And we lost communication. My husband and I tried to drive to Tracy and her husband John's house to check on them, but the emergency crews wouldn't let us get anywhere near their street. It wasn't until after 9 o'clock at night that the roads were clear enough to drive to their house. It was pitch black. All the way over, I kept thinking about our friends. They had dreamed for a long time of leaving the big city and moving out to the countryside. 13 years ago, after their children were grown, they found a little 5-acre property with an old fixer-upper farmhouse here in Appomattox. It was dubbed the Itty Bitty Farm. They wanted to be self-sufficient, and so they planted a big orchard full of fruit trees and tilled the garden beds. They shunned debt and patiently made improvements on the house only as fast as they could earn the money to do so. A couple of years ago, Tracy put the scaffolding up herself and spent the hot summer days painting the house sky blue because she loves the color blue. Just a few months ago, they excitedly showed us their new, beautiful wood floor they helped install. They had been saving for that for a very long time. John put the finishing touches on the crown molding in their bedroom the morning of the tornado. You could feel the sense of pride in every project they undertook. It never bothered them that there was no air conditioning in the house. I asked her once if the noise of the train that sped past the front of their property several times a day bothered her. She laughed and she said that she and her husband were like a couple of kids. When a train came by, they'd run out on their porch and wave at it. They loved the trains. The front porch had old-fashioned Christmas lights strung across it, which they turned on clear into February. She told me how happy the bright colors made her. When they were out of town, we'd go over and take care of the chickens, and they'd give us fresh eggs in exchange. On one side of the house, there was a picnic table under a giant pecan tree where they regularly invited friends over to visit and eat. As we neared their property, the moonlight was just bright enough to see that the giant pecan tree had taken out the back half of the house. The attic was now in their kitchen. We saw a flashlight shining on the back side of the property and called out. It was John surveying the damage with another mutual friend and his young son. As he showed us around the property with his flashlight, we saw all the big shade trees lying on the ground. A few chickens huddled under the collapsed chicken coop. The garage and other outbuildings were gone, completely gone. Most of the barn had blown away. There were debris everywhere. We asked if they had somewhere to sleep that night. He said they weren't going anywhere. This was home. Their bedroom was in the front half of the house, and he had determined that part of the house was still safe. "We'll be just fine," he said. I wouldn't have expected him to answer any other way. "There's a good chance the house will be bulldozed, but I know John and Tracy are going to be just fine because they possess the same characteristics and traits as the pioneer stock who laid the foundation of America. They have the same spirit of independence and rugged self-reliance that will see them through all the challenges ahead." That first night when John gave us a tour of the damages, he kept saying that it was all just stuff. Losing it didn't matter to him. It was the relationship with his wife that mattered, and he still had her. And the reason Tracy wasn't there that first night was because she was off doing what she always does. She was comforting and tending to the needs of someone else. While most people are looking at the elections in November to solve our nation's problems, I'm looking to people like Tracy and John. They remind me of the wise words written by David Starr Jordan, the first president of Stanford University over 100 years ago. "If the experiment of government by the people is to be successful, it is you and such as you who must make it so. The future of the republic must lie in the hands of the men and women of culture and intelligence, of self-control and of self-resource, capable of taking care of themselves and of helping others. If it falls not into such hands, the republic will have no future. The problem of life is not to make life easier, but to make men stronger so that no problem shall be beyond their solution. The remedy for oppression is to bring in better men who cannot be oppressed." Close quote. Maybe the most useful question isn't, who is the best president the people can have? But rather, are we the best people a president can have? I've said it before and I'll say it again. You mothers are our hope as you raise a generation who value relationships over stuff and self-reliance over entitlement, who find more joy in giving than in receiving, and who can find happiness in as simple things as passing trains and colored Christmas lights. When I saw Tracy the morning after the tornado, she wasn't discouraged in the least. She said that she hadn't expected this chapter of her life to end so abruptly, but she had dreams in storage and was already forward-thinking to their next great adventure. She was irritated at the condemned notice they posted on her door, so she countered with a sign of her own, which she taped next to the condemned sign. It was a declaration of all the things she cherished, written in 2003 when they moved into the house. She had not lost one single thing on that list. The list began with, "Hope for a better, brighter tomorrow," and ended with, "Knowing that families are forever," and "Courage to endure to the end." Just a postscript. Tracy and John rebuilt their little home and farm with much sacrifice and hard labor, and it's better than ever. Surprisingly, they just put it on the market. I talked to her at church yesterday and asked if it's hard to leave it now that it's finally done. She responded that it is no sacrifice. What we sacrifice is but a crumb when compared with the loaf of bread the Lord pays in return. They've unencumbered themselves from stuff, and they're ready to tackle a new chapter in their lives and plan on serving missions for our church for as long as they are able. They leave in a few weeks. I wish them well. And now I'll leave you with a little poem by Emil Karl Oren called The Conqueror. It's easy to laugh when the skies are blue and the sun is shining bright. Yes, easy to laugh when your friends are true and there's happiness in sight. But when hope has fled and the skies are gray and the friends of the past have turned away, ah, then indeed it's a hero's feat to conjure a smile in the face of defeat. It's easy to laugh when the storm is o'er and your ship is safe in port. Yes, easy to laugh when you're on the shore, secure from the tempest's sport. But when the wild waves wash o'er the storm-swept deck and your gallant ship is a battered wreck, ah, that is the time when it's well worthwhile to look in the face of defeat with a smile. It's easy to laugh when the battle's fought and you know that the victory's won. Yes, easy to laugh when the prize you sought is yours when the race is run. But here's to the man who can laugh when the blast of adversity blows. He will conquer at last. For the hardest man in the world to beat is the man who can laugh in the face of defeat. Bye-bye. See you next time.